Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And we would ask that if there's any remote possibility that you might actually want to use your faith, then we'd ask you to learn, pray, and act. I also want to kind of plug the Timber Nation. They still have some opening. I've not heard from them. I've asked them to let me know when they've kind of crossed that threshold regarding orders. Now, it usually takes them a few weeks to get stuff done, and they've got things. They do things in parallel, so they can handle, you know, they can handle your orders if you're looking for something by Christmas. If you want some good solid hardwood furniture for, you know, racks, tables, what have you, timbernation.com. And the other thing I want to make sure I do on a daily basis until Thanksgiving is I would ask that you consider changing your family tradition from gluttony to actually following Washington's lead on this nation giving thanks. The very first Thanksgiving was one of service to him. And so I would ask that people actually look at, you know, trying to sanctify, actually consider this, sanctify the Constitution so that we can actually have his blessings in trying to save the Constitution, because it's on the precipice. And just, most people think that just because we've got Republicans in office, that doesn't mean that they're going to do their job. Look at all the red states and all of the progressive policies where they're, as a matter of fact, welcome back, Tammy. We've got Tammy to talk about this. And she's actually from the reddest state in the union. And you probably have the only solid constitutional legislature in all the land. And I say that with sarcasm, right?
I was going to say, really? That I didn't know if you were serious or joking.
No, but if you look, and I can actually pull the numbers up, folks, but I don't want it to, you know, stammer around. The point is, how many Democrats do you have? Maybe you can count them on one or two hands at the most, right?
In our state legislature?
In your state legislature, right. In each house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's six in the House now. And I'm not sure, maybe a couple in the Senate.
There you go. In the entire legislature, folks, they only have a couple of Democrats. But why is it that you guys are being pelted with progressive agendas? I mean, they're taxing you to oblivion. At least, any little tax, everybody squirms. But it's a real problem, isn't it? Is it not a problem?
I mean, yeah, it's because we have Democrats who run as Republicans.
There you go.
They can't get elected.
Or so that's what we call rhinos. But we also have conservatives, because I see conservatives that just completely miss the mark. Conservative, folks, does not equate to constitutional. There's a huge difference. Oh, well, I'm going to support your Second Amendment rights. I'm going to support these, you know, few things that I consider, I'm against abortion, but, well, I'm okay with the national education system. I'm okay with all of the rest of the tyranny. They don't take a stand on the Constitution. Now,
yep, we have a majority conservative now for the first time in, I think, ever. So let's see how they do.
Yeah. And, you know, every once in a while, because I'll share this with you, every once in a while, before we get into the Kentucky resolutions, because, folks, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I try to cover content. This is where we read the source documents. In other words, I don't want you to hear what I say. I want you to hear what Madison said. And right now, we're kind of telling you what Thomas Jefferson said regarding unconstitutional government when the government overreaches. That's what the Kentucky resolutions are all about. But I received actually, if you reach out and contact me, I will, you know, and actually you create a diatribe or a conversation or anything, I'll do everything I can to reach out so that you can actually come on and have an opportunity to say what you want, because it's easy. Because believe me, I can sit here. If Donald Trump wants to come on this show and talk about what constitutionally he can do and how he can actually make America great, or really put it on in a constitutional context, not under this umbrella of the Republican Party or under this conservative agenda or retribution. Because unfortunately, America wants vengeance instead of wanting their Constitution back. We are so caught up in a diametrically opposing factions. And it's not just, you know, positive and negative. It's not just black and white or Democrat and Republican. If you look at the Republican people that claim to be conservative Republican under that umbrella, those people who voted for Trump, they are so divided. They're divided over religious factions. They're divided over social mores. There's just so many reasons why we continually find more and more reasons to divide. And the intent of this show is to unify. And one of the criticisms that I get is regarding the fact, or at least in this last one, this isn't about me. This is not about me. This is all about the Constitution. And so it's actually about you trying to get everybody to understand the Constitution, because we are in this mess because of our constitutional illiteracy. And if anybody thinks otherwise, then by all means, reach out, just as somebody reached out just the other day. Now, as I look at this, we were literally, you know, talking about the Kentucky resolutions. But yesterday, I was talking about, actually not yesterday, I'm sorry, Monday, I was talking about Trump actually engaging this move towards a digital cryptocurrency and all of that, that the Constitution has no allowance for this. And somebody heard this and I don't want to label people as sycophants. I don't care, you know, I'm going to do whatever this person wants, and whatever they want is the best thing. I will debate anybody on these things. I'll debate any professor. I'll debate any lawyer. I'll debate any judge. I'll debate any politician when it comes to the Constitution. And if they are aligned with living and fulfilling the Constitution and getting government back into the framework of the Constitution, then you won't hear an argument. But if they don't care about the Constitution and they want to go down this path of, you know, driving an agenda, creating global peace and creating a, you know, global government, whatever it is, then you're going to get, I mean, it's only going to get me to stand up and say, that's all wrong. That's absolutely wrong. I am not a sycophant, nor do I care to be. And I don't think most of the people that listen to this show understand this. This is not a show about entertainment. This is an educational show. And I, you know, that's why I have, you know, guest hosts like Tammy come on, and she kind of assists while we read these documents. So, so the other thing
Trump on here. Let's get him on.
What's that? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
How do we get Trump on here? Let's get him on.
You know, who am I? As a matter of fact, 9 times out of 10, when people feel that they're being criticized, it takes a good leader enjoys criticism. And as a matter of fact, if it's constructive criticism, a good leader would actually get engaged with that. A bad leader only seeks out sycophants, right? A bad leader wants to work in an echo chamber where the only people that agree with him are close to him. And I can't believe that, you know, I can't say this, because when you get to the level of a billionaire, that has no play in whether you're a good leader or not a good leader. I mean, look at Bill Gates. I mean, I don't think Bill Gates is a maniacal person, and I don't think he understands leadership. I think he's a very smart guy, and I think he's very manipulative, but I don't think he understands what a true leader, because a true leader actually clings to the core values, doesn't pervert core values. And he's clearly waging warfare against humanity. So yeah. A good leader would not do that.
Right.
A good leader would not try to move and enforce global communism, these types of things. But anyway, so I can't say that if you become a millionaire or a billionaire, that's the, you know, that's the true test that you are a good leader. Absolutely not. You've done what you've been told. You've worked, you've compromised, you may be a good politician, but that doesn't mean that you are a good leader. Leaders do the right thing. And as a matter of fact, in today's world, good leaders are very seldom rewarded.
True, true.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, they're excoriated. So we kind of left off yesterday in the resolutions of Kentucky. This is Thomas Jefferson again, and he's going through Resolution 8, and this is where he's going through what has to happen and why this has to happen. And so you just went through, and we haven't even finished, by the way, because we made comment of this, that this part, is Resolution 8, has one of the world's longest sentences that, you know, I've ever read. Now, I'm sure there's other ones out there, but this is a good one.
I don't know. This one's pretty long.
It's a huge paragraph. This is a big paragraph. It's almost, I wouldn't say it's almost a page, but it's a good paragraph. It's a good sized paragraph. Anyway, we left off with the fact that he was talking about, the pretext of, you know, what government should be doing and whether we hold to the rod or whether we actually, you know, depart from. And he talks about, you know, this whole point of going away from the law itself is truly despotism. And actually, if you look up the definition of tyranny, if I could paraphrase this, tyranny is the epitome, or I should say, it is the action or the complete utilization of arbitrary law. In other words, not law that is founded upon powers given. They're assuming powers and they're making it up as they go along. That is the true epitome of tyranny. And so we kind of left off in the middle of this. And so why don't you go ahead and pick it up with the free government is founded in the jealousy and in confidence, that part right there. And let's take it down to the next yellow highlighted part. So, folks, if you're reading along, this starts off with free government is founded on, it's highlighted in yellow, and then we're going to read that, and then we're going to read the next section of highlighted yellow, and then we'll stop because we'll stop before we get into the red text. Okay? That way you can read along, folks. Go ahead.
All right. Free government is founded in jealousy and not in confidence. It is jealousy and not confidence which prescribes limited constitutions to bind down those who we are obliged to trust with power, that our Constitution has accordingly fixed the limits to which, and no further, our confidence may go. And let the honest advocate of confidence read the Alien and Sedition Acts and say if the Constitution has not been wise in fixing limits to the government it created, and whether we should be wise in destroying those limits. Let him say what the government is, if it be not a tyranny, which the men of our choice have con-erred on our president, and the president of our choice has assented to and accepted over the friendly stranger to whom the mild spirit of our country and its law have pledged hospitality and protection, that the men of our choice have more respected the bare suspicion of the president, that the solid right of innocence, the claims of justification, the sacred force of truth, and the forms and substance of law and justice.
Yeah, go ahead and read that last line.
Oh, okay. In questions of powers, then, let no more be heard of confidence in man, but bind him down from mischief by the chains of the Constitution.
There you go. Folks, I'm not an outlier. I may be an outlier for our time, but when it came down to the creation of this nation, this is kind of one. This is why it's so important to start understanding common law. And that's why on Monday, that's why I dove into that topic. Because the truth about common law is not out there. And as a matter of fact, I know there's some books out there, but I've yet to find a book that actually is based on common law within the context of this framework of government, a constitutional government, or more specifically, common law within the powers granted. Because when you look at the jurisdiction of the court, when it comes to common law, the federal government does not have any jurisdiction or any law, period. Admiralty law, it doesn't matter. Their jurisdiction is tied to what has been granted in Article 3. And it literally states only those things arising under this Constitution. So when the federal courts open their doors for land, you know, national forests, national parks, or labor, or housing, abortion, they have no jurisdiction. As I stated on Monday, they've knocked down this wall of jurisdiction, and they've just considered the whole world is open for them to review, bend, and make law. They have converted our constitutional law system, or I should say, this framework of all laws must be in pursuant to the Constitution. And they've created a civil law to create their own statutes, assume any powers, and so forth. And they actually teach this in law school today. And as a matter of fact, I'm hoping to actually have my friend lawyer that I work with every once in a while. But, you know, we just kind of started to get to know. And he actually, you know, told me that when he went through school, and this was several years ago, he's retired. Several years ago, they were talking about how the federal government had the ability to assume anything that they wanted to, and how they attained that power without an amendment, without the sanction and the authority of the states. So as we go through these very specific documents, we're going to hear Madison and Jefferson say they can't do that. They have to be tied down by chains to the Constitution, as he just stated. Okay, so this next part, these are, you know, just like when you see maybe a cartoon. You know, I live in the days when cartoons were violent. Not that they're not violent now, but they're just sick violence today. But this is kind of like a comedy, you know, cartoon where somebody's got a noodle and they hit somebody with every sentence and almost with every enunciation, you know, of a syllable, boom and boom and boom, you know, back and forth, you know, forward hand, backhand. And so try to imagine, you know, Jefferson basically firing off this way, because this is what he basically is doing. And this is why this is all highlighted in red. Go ahead and let's just start. And if you've got a question, or if I need to interrupt you, I will. But if you got a question, by all means, break. Okay? Go ahead.
Okay. That this Commonwealth does therefore call on its co-states for an expression of their sentiments on the acts concerning aliens and for the punishment of certain crimes herein before specified, plainly declaring whether these acts are or are not authorized by the federal compact.
Okay, so right there, he's telling them that every state in the union needs to express their opinions, whether they believe that these things are authorized or not. Go ahead, next.
And it doubts not that their sense will be so announced as to prove their attachment unaltered to limited government, whether general or particular, and that the right and liberties of their co-states will be exposed to no dangers by remaining embarked in a common bottom with their own.
Okay, so I don't know if that's just a typo with a period and then and.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But clearly, he wants to make sure that everybody, you know, understands and has this reason, you know, to whether they're going down this path of altering and or, you know, changing the powers. Anyway, go on to the next one.
Okay. That they will concur with this Commonwealth in considering the said acts as so palpably against the Constitution as to amount to an undisguised declaration that the compact is not meant to be the measure of the powers of the general government, but that it will proceed in the exercise over these states of all powers whatsoever, that they will view this as seizing the rights of the states and consolidating them in the hands of the general government, with a power assumed to bind the states, not merely as the case is made federal, casus, how do you say that?
Casus foederis, yes, go ahead.
Okay, but. Casus foederis, but in all cases whatsoever, by laws made with their consent, not with their consent, but by others against their consent, that this would be to surrender the form of government we have chosen and live under one deriving its powers from its own will, and not from our authority.
There you go. So let's stop right there.
Okay.
Those last few lines, he's literally laying it out that we're living under a government that is operating under its will, its discretion. This is in 1798, folks. And they're only talking about the Alien and Sedition Acts. In other words, here is a point where the federal government has assumed already, unconstitutionally, a national bank. And even though that may not be a derived power, it was implied within the powers. Clearly, these Alien and Sedition Acts aren't about an argument of whether it could be implied or not. Now, I want to stop right here and say that there has been no allowance within the ratification debates that the federal government can imply powers and assume them. The reason they got away with it back then is it took too long for the word to get out to the states, for the states, because look how long it took with the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions. This took over a year for them to, you know, have a communication, because they created this government and everything seemed all do-si-do. Everybody was going their own way and starting to prosper under this Constitution. And actually, they were being shielded by all sorts of harassments of Britain at the time. Britain was impressing, stealing our cargo, impressing us. We had all these different problems. We had problems out in the Mediterranean. You know, when Jefferson took office early in his presidency, the Ottoman Empire seized one of our ships. So, you know, the states were kind of impervious to all, or I should say most of the people in the states. It's not that the state that actually had a ship seized was unaware, but, you know, they were living a pretty decent life now. They had a very strong government that was protecting them so that they could focus on things that the states wanted to focus on. And now they came down with assuming these powers, and these powers were directly violating the Bill of Rights by taking away your freedom of speech and freedom of the press. They were taking away the freedom of the states being able, at this was a very short window of 20 years where the states had the authority of the importation of persons. That it was granted, actually, the federal government basically couldn't cease the importation of persons for 20 years. It wasn't until 1808 when that stopped, and we've already talked about this. So, as we're looking at this, he's basically saying that bottom line, they are actually operating with their will instead of being tied to the authority that has been granted them. And so I see we're going to be going into a break. But bottom line, they cannot go outside their authority. The only reason they were able to get away with this, is due to the fact that they had, you know, this huge buffer between them and the states. And so they created law and actually started enforcing it. And shortly after this law was created, a gentleman that was running a press, shortly after that, was arrested and incarcerated. So they were already striking out before the states even got wind. We'll be right back after this. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so keep in mind also that right here, because Jefferson's appealing, he's talking to and appealing to the states, the state legislatures. And so you can't come out there with, you know, a gun and just start shooting your siblings. You have to kind of be nice with some force. So thus the metaphor of a noodle, you know. And when I say a noodle, I don't mean a pasta noodle. I mean like a swimming noodle, right? You know, styrofoam, long noodle, you know, doesn't hurt.
Well, that's good to clarify. I was picturing a pasta noodle.
Yeah, okay. So, thank you. I apologize. But bottom line, and this is where he kind of sums this up of what has to happen. And so go ahead.
Okay. And that the co-states, recurring to their natural right in cases not made federal, will concur in declaring these acts void and of no force, and will each take measure of its own for providing that neither these acts nor any others of the general government not plainly and intentionally authorized by the Constitution shall be exercised within their respective territories.
Okay, so to me, this right here is where Jefferson, I don't think, really understood, because you got to understand, he was not involved in the ratification debates. I'm not sure if he read them. But what he was basically saying is that they needed to kind of cooperate and take their own measures. Madison was actually in the, when we go through the next document with Madison, Madison clarifies this better. And there's a conversation later where, you know, Jefferson, and as a matter of fact, Madison's never one to try to put words in Jefferson's mouth. But the reality is, as Jefferson talks about, that they need to nullify this, but they need to do this in concert. So he's not talking about them working in interposition. He's just talking that they need to nullify, and he wants to lead the example of that. That is not a very clear picture, which is why Madison painstakingly goes through the details. And when you read the difference between Jefferson, when we go through the difference of Jefferson's resolutions of 1799, and we go through Madison's report of 1800, you will clearly hear the difference of how Madison spells out the details constitutionally, what has to happen, where Jefferson, he speaks, they lament, but clearly they have the right to nullify, but they didn't. And here's the question. Jefferson was so adamant about nullifying these laws, and yet he didn't. He didn't call upon Kentucky to do that. In other words, this is a typical legal ploy. They're trying to use hyperbole. They're trying to basically create this threat that they're not going to actually fulfill, because the doctrine of nullification means that if you are going to nullify as a state a federal law, they would have to leave the Union. And we'll get into this when we get into the notes on nullification. See, Jefferson doesn't really speak of interposition, but it is clear, not in this document, but in the next document, he wanted the states to work together in getting the federal government to nullify what they did. They have to do that. They have to interpose and force them. In other words, sometimes you got to, you know, get on top of your sibling, twist their arm and so forth, and force them to, you know, to realize that if you don't do these things, we're going to hurt you. And the ways that we have to hurt our political servants at the federal level is to basically charge them with felonies, charge them with their failure to actually support the Constitution as a representative of the state, and extradite them so that they can be removed in accordance with Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, and they get replaced. That is the strongest action that the state can actually do to anybody in Congress, is to remove them and replace them. That right there is the ultimate butt-whooping of a sibling, if you're kind of going with that mixed metaphor there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so they didn't have, so here's the problem. They had in their day honor and integrity. Guess what they didn't have? They didn't have the 14th Amendment. And there's no doubt in my mind, Madison and Jefferson were just frustrated because they didn't have that little ultimate weapon to use against these knuckleheads. And so go ahead, let's read the last of this, and then we can dive into the Virginia resolution. So go ahead.
The last one. Okay, resolved that the said committee be authorized to communicate by writing or personal conference at any times or places whatever with any person or persons who may be appointed by any one or more co-states to correspond or confer with them, and that they lay their proceedings before the next session of assembly.
Yeah, okay, so he's wanting to confirm, don't forget, to set up those committees of conference and correspondence so that we can start communicating to, you know, work together. So he's clearly talking about working together and communicating. That is essential. In a family, you know, I'm not sure, but I probably think any marriage therapist, you know, a marriage counselor, whatever, would probably say it's not a good thing, and it's probably a bad sign if husbands and wives aren't talking.
Maybe a little.
Yeah, and so the problem here is we've got a marriage of states, and the states need to communicate. And unfortunately, they didn't create these channels, permanent channels. This goes back to, and I'm while you're working on getting the Virginia resolutions up, I'll just say, because this goes back to a point that I have brought up regarding who's that guy? Snowden. So when we look at how, you know, intelligence is operating today and how government has grown and bolstered these massive muscles of intelligence, because they are very strong, large agencies that are unmatched. I don't think that there's any system out there. I mean, when you look at China's huge in cyber, but they don't have a big human. They do have human, but it's not like the CIA. I mean, we've advanced and we've been at this for hundreds of years. Now, there's others. Now, I should probably say that Britain is probably another one that has a very sophisticated intelligence and collection system. And so when we look at the, you know, this capability of this monster getting out of hand, it became pretty evident over the several years. I mean, historically, there's plenty of evidence that they have done things to us and to other people that has been absolutely wrong. And whenever you criticize them, you get, you know, whoop, you get on the radar. What needs to happen is because there's no process for people working inside the community, the Intel community. There's no process whatsoever for you to legitimately make and highlight infractions against the Constitution, that this agency is doing something that they shouldn't be doing. And so the way to fix this, because who has the oversight over the federal government? It's not the intel agencies and within themselves. It's kind of like having the internal affairs within a police department investigating themselves. But actually, the entities that need to be looking into this are those governing bodies of the people. And therefore, when we look at the intel community, there needs to be a network created within every state, connected. So in other words, there's this, I call it a SCIF. It's a sensitive compartmented information facility that gets built into every capital, that whenever any person within that state boundary comes in and says, I have a matter of national intelligence and national security that I need to divulge and need to go into the SCIF. And so what you do is you escort this person in. You don't give them access to anything inside there. You just take them into this little bubble. And, you know, obviously they've gone through bomb checks or what have you. And you basically let them get in with whatever they brought in, not weapons or bombs. But you let them come in with the evidence that they brought in so that they don't disclose this in open space. And as they disclose this, this immediately is being broadcasted. In other words, this is like a little broadcasting room where this person starts to spill the beans, and it is being broadcast and recorded at every state, so that every word that's said, every response that's being made is being heard and recorded, so that the states, if they don't know it, they'll get a notification. Hey, you're getting a recording because something is being transmitted from this very important broadcast room out of this state. So you go in there, and you have your cleared people go in there that's a part of your legislature, and they go in and they go, oh my gosh, this is terrible. And then they actually will start receiving their own copies of all of this documentation or what have you. As Snowden, he had a thumb drive, or actually, I believe he had several thumb drives, because he was collecting intelligence for almost the entire career in the intelligence community. It's not like he all of a sudden, you know, oh, I really don't like what we're doing, because this has been proven that Snowden started taking data and stuff before he even had this, you know, this nasty taste in his mouth that this was violating the Constitution. He had the intent to do this. If you do any research on this, you'll find that some of the stuff that he exposed was stuff that he collected before he got this bitter taste in his mouth of what we were doing or what was being done. So this is why this guy's not a hero. This guy had everything, you know, planned out so that he could become, you know, become a famous guy. He's a narcissist. That's it. I have no respect for the man, and all he did was cause damage. Going into your state and having them, exposing this to them, now your state has the power to go to the federal government and say, you have no authority to be doing these things to U.S. citizens, and reel them in. That's how we actually have oversight over these monsters. We got to get the parents, because it's just a bully. This is a child bully. The CIA, all these agencies are part of the creature that we created. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So now we've got Madison's response. This is the Kentucky or the Virginia resolutions of 1798. Now, again, they promulgated, they signed and dispatched the Kentucky resolutions on November 10th. Virginia responded on December 24th. So in other words, how long did it take to get from Kentucky's capital to Virginia's capital? A few days. And so, and back in those days, they didn't have the holidays. They didn't celebrate gluttony like we do today. And so it probably took about a week to get to the legislature. And at that point in time, Madison was there waiting for it. He was sitting there knowing it was coming because he had this conversation with Jefferson. They were working together. And so... He went down and kind of prepared them and says, I'm waiting for some correspondence to come in here with from Kentucky, and I'm here to help you, you know, so that we can do what's right in responding to the information we're going to get regarding the Kentucky resolution or the Kentucky resolutions out of, you know, the legislature. So they respond, and this is what they say. And so the first thing that Madison really does is he kind of comes out and says, you know what? We're friends. We're all friends here. And that's kind of the tone of his first resolution. Go ahead.
Hold on.
Resolution one.
It's taken me forever to pull this up.
Okay. So I will read it then. Resolved.
Yeah, you go ahead.
Resolved that the General Assembly of Virginia doth unequivocally express a firm resolution to maintain and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of this state against every aggression, either foreign or domestic, and that they will support the Constitution of the United States in all measures warranted by the former. So, actually, I misspoke because he gets to the warm fuzzy in Resolution 2. He basically says, we're obligated to support the Constitution, and we do and will support that Constitution against all foreign enemies and domestic, and we will also support our state constitution. But he actually uses that against every aggression, either foreign or domestic. This is an obligation of every citizen. And for those who don't like, you know, criticism of their candidate, of their politician, you know, you don't be bad-mouthed. If they're not abiding by the Constitution, they're going to get excoriated by me.
Mm-hmm.
And they deserve it.
Yeah, they do.
And I know how hard it is for a person, because, I mean, I can imagine how hard it probably was for you, because you're running a race that you would want to excoriate your opponent.
Yeah.
But you have to be nice in politics because the people might, unless you actually have stated a very good argument and articulated that. This is why I tell you folks, your campaign begins today. If you're running in 2 years, you start your campaign, especially if you're running against some mealy-mouth, you know, rhino or some mealy-mouth conservative that is not fully supporting the Constitution.
Well, especially in a small town where it's their friend and their relative. And
oh, yeah, absolutely. So in local elections, these people, I like that. I go to church with that person. They're good people. Mm-hmm. Folks, it's not about being good people here. It's about supporting the Constitution to the letter. No compromise. When we allow compromise of the Constitution, it's tantamount to allowing sin. When somebody is compromising the laws of God, oh, well, yeah, I'm married, but, you know, I love everybody. I love all the women, whatever, you know, however you do that. You can't compromise that, or it's sin, right? Black and white.
Yeah,
okay.
100%, yep.
Okay, so we have to take that stand, and we have to stop looking at what's good for the party, what's good for conservatives, because it has nothing to do with what's good for America. The only thing that's good for America is fulfillment of the oath of office of every public servant to support the Constitution in the invasion, in this encroachment, in the in our currencies, in, you know, this movement of globalism, in communism in our school system, and actually in the school system, in the national health care, in all unconstitutional government. It's creating the fraud. When I say this debt is fraud, all that money that's going to these things that are unconstitutional is fraud. They don't have the authority to spend it. If you're writing a check for an institution you work for on something that you don't have the authority, even though somebody tells you you can do it, you're committing fraud. And that person, whoever's authorizing it, everybody's committing fraud that says you got to do it. And so this is why I say, when this is all said and done, and when the world gets this real shock, because unfortunately the world thinks that this debt crap that their nation is under and that we're all under, well, I don't know about them, because they actually have general powers. But we don't have general powers. Our government, unlike all other governments out there, have been confined to only being able to do these very specific things, which means that their debt probably isn't fraud. But anybody that is making and taking, you know, debt from us, where we owe them money, and we're spending it on things that they had no authority to spend. And if you look at the outlays of what they spend, folks, we bring in enough money under taxes to cover our constitutional obligations. And the debt that we're bringing in, we're actually spending that good money that fits the constitutional obligations on fraudulent things. So in other words, we're not just defrauding, you know, we're not working with the nation, or I should these the world nations, in defrauding the American people. We're also directly defrauding the American people by taking their money and spending it on things they don't have the authority to do. It is such a deep, this abyss, this swamp of fraud. Okay, so did you find it?
I did, yep.
Okay, so now this is where he gives the warm and fuzzy, but he also, I mean, in every way, he's pointing out very specific things, which is why we have some highlights in this one resolution. Go ahead.
That this assembly most solemnly declares a warm attachment to the Union of the States, to maintain which it pledges all its powers, and that for this end, it is their duty to watch over and oppose every infraction of those principles which constitute the only basis of that union.
Okay, let's stop right there, because that highlighted part is key. And for this end, it is their duty, he's saying there, it is every state's duty to watch over and oppose every infraction. Infraction, not big, bad things, everyone. Any little tolerance, you cannot tolerate one little iota of a compromise. None. Of those principles which constitute, and when he says which constitutes the union, the basis of the union, that is the Constitution. Those principles are right there in that compact. Go ahead and finish it off.
Because a faithful observance of them can alone secure its existence and the public happiness.
There you go. Okay, so now... The third resolution is probably one of the most important. And when we get into the report, he really, really goes through explaining this resolution back to the state legislature in a formal communication. Because when these resolutions come back, or I should say when the states respond to both the Kentucky and the Virginia resolutions, they're not being nice. They make bad insinuations, and they actually insulted Thomas Jefferson, where, I mean, that's why he uses the word, we can only lament. So they, you know, this is where, at this point in time, the other states, there were, 16? So that was 14 states that all came back and said, you know, kiss off. Okay, go ahead.
That this assembly doth explicitly and peremptorily declare that it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact, which the states are parties, as limited by the plain sense and intention of the instrument constituting the compact, as no further valid that they are authorized by the grants enumerated in that compact, and that in case of a deliberate, palpable, and dangerous exercise of other powers not granted by the said compact, the states who are parties thereto have the right and are in duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of the evil.
Okay, right there. So we can stop right there.
Okay.
And then we'll get back to, you know, doing what we have to do to preserve the union. But he's basically coming out and saying, we explicitly and commandingly, peremptorily, commandingly declare that it views the state of Virginia, this assembly, this legislature of a sovereign state, views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact. In other words, the powers that they have, to which the states are the parties thereto, In other words, that's our compact, and they've only got these powers. And he actually says it by saying this in the next statement, or this little phrase, as limited by the plain sense and intention of the instrument constituting the compact. In other words, these are the only powers that they have. This is a power of attorney. As no further valid than that they are authorized by the grants enumerated. In other words, the grants are those powers listed in that constitution. And that in deliberate, blatant, palpable, meaning blatant, and dangerous exercises of powers that they don't have the authority to commit by that constitution, the states who are the parties thereto have the right and are duty bound to interpose. Interpose means to seize. It means to stop, immediately stop. You know, when there's actual danger, you know, like when your children are doing something and you don't do something to actually stop that child, believe me, I see it all the time. Parents actually, because they didn't follow up, or even if it's not even a parent, let's say you accidentally hurt somebody and you stand there and watch them die, and you will be charged with murder and, you know, depraved homicide or depraved indifference or what have you. I mean, you have an obligation to do anything and everything you can, because as long as you actually have a record to dial 911, I called, you know, I was administering first aid. But if you just stand there it literally was an accident, even though you're in shock, you will be held to a standard of justice. So this is why we have to stop this. The parents, because let's remember the relationship. The states are the parents to that federal government. It's our child, and it is to serve us. That means the president is there to make sure that those powers granted are being done properly so that we're getting the service that we're supposed to be getting. Now, go ahead and let's read this last line, because this last line is literally talking about, you know, making sure that, because the states, their objective is to maintain harmony, to basically maintain their rights so that they're not being encumbered and actually being harassed and actually having to deal with tyranny from this child government. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm going to read a little before the very end.
Okay.
Just so it's in context. The states who are parties thereto have the right and are in duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of the evil and for maintaining within their respective limits the authorities' rights and liberties appertaining to them.
That's right. In other words, basically maintaining the respective limits, the authorities' rights and liberties that they are supposed to have appertaining to them. I mean,
everybody understands a limited power of attorney. So,
know what? You'd think so. But unfortunately, we've ran out of time. And so fortunately, we kind of concluded with Resolution 3. So tomorrow, we will step into Resolution 4 of the Virginia Resolutions. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.